United States, are elections in your country democratic? It's a straightforward enough question, and you may think you know the answer. The U.S. has universal suffrage, apparently free and fair electoral systems, and, debatably, no overt voter suppression. Sure, it might not be a direct democracy where everybody is involved in the legislative process, but there hasn't been one of those on Earth since classical Athens anyway. You would probably describe the U.S. as a robust representative democracy where voters pick their agents through elections and agents do what a majority of voters want. It's not perfect and you'll never make everybody happy, but it's as fair as it can be, right? Actually, probably not. In recent years, political scientists have spent much of their energy researching and showing us exactly how undemocratic American democracy really is. If you've spent any time studying American government, the sentiment won't be new to you. In their cynical 2017 manifesto, Democracy for Realists, Christopher Akin and Larry Bartels call the idea that elections produce responsive government a, quote, folk theory, unquote, and do their best to prove that it's a myth. Their argument is multifaceted, involving gerrymandering, the prevalence of ignorant and/or apathetic voters, and the inability of citizens to affect their representatives once elected, to name just a few aspects. But there is one stepping stone, one knot into which all of these threads converge, and that is the election itself. You might say that direct democracy is inefficient and impractical, even impossible, in governing and legislating, and you'd be right. But what about the electoral system that produces the necessary evil of representatives? Shouldn't that be as democratic as possible so that the government is invested with a so-called democratic mandate? In the etymological sense of the word, democracy is the power of the people. So we might argue that the election should carry as much of the people's power over as possible by ensuring that the chosen representative reflects their votes and desires and will act in their name. In Akin and Bartels' realist world, the truth of American elections is more like this. About half of possible voters, many of whom care little about the election and are ill-informed, cast votes for candidates in a manner that will come nowhere close to producing a government representing the true preferences and opinions of the majority. Wash, rinse, repeat in 2 years. And if that's true, and by virtually all qualified accounts, it is, that is super sad. But what if there's another way? What if we could set aside precedent and American pride, and we could reform, actually change our system for the better? Well, guess what, America? This isn't the only democracy in the world. In my humble opinion, Americans are incredibly myopic about our own democratic deficit. We so easily forget, in the face of our own electoral issues, that the rest of the democratic countries in the world have similar problems, and many of them have tried to solve them with ideas that provide stark points of contrast with the U.S. And maybe, just maybe, we could take a few pointers from them. So, welcome to I Love America and America Hates Me, where my wonderful co-host, Patty Yao, and I, Jordan Murphy, ask the question, if America's electoral system for legislative representatives is broken, what can we do to fix it? We'll take a look at representative democratic electoral systems around the world and talk about what works, what doesn't, and figure out just how democratic an election can get. A secret agenda to promote in this podcast. I hate the two-party system. Patty, do you have any thoughts?
So I feel like no American can fit into one of the two-party systems because we're a very diverse population with very diverse views on a variety of issues. So I feel like that the two-party system can have two likely results. Either we are forced to concede our varying views to the platforms of either party, or we will mold our views to those of either party. So in the first case, it seems that a two-party system isn't sufficient representation for the diverse views of the public. And I think this is really evident right now in the Democratic Party. A lot of leftists favored the views of Bernie Sanders, yet are forced, in a sense, to settle for Biden. And in the second case, a two-party system can easily lead to extreme polarization, as we've seen, especially in the last 4 years with Trump's presidency. So I guess the main question comes down to whether or not we think either of those results is beneficial to America or is sufficient representation for the American people.
I have similar thoughts. I don't think that the two-party system can ever be representative of Americans. On like on a fundamental level, people do not and will never fit into two camps. We are too diverse, and our political opinions don't fit on a two-dimensional spectrum of liberal or conservative. There are a lot of policy areas where we can expect people to agree and disagree, like along completely different lines. There's the traditional social spectrum or the economic ideological spectrum, but there are also authoritarian and liberal bents and everything in between. And I also think it would be valid for a voter to say that every situation demands context and refuse to make ideological assertions about hypothetical scenarios. But we don't live in a political system that allows for that. You have to pick a side, or you have to be left out of the decision entirely. And so we've convinced ourselves that there are only two camps, and we contort ourselves to fit into them. And the system perpetuates itself just by existing. It creates a culture of divisiveness, polarization, where nobody set out with the intention to fight, but our parties tell us that we have to keep fighting, and that fighting each other is our priority, not solving the problems that we face as a country. And I don't think that's democratic in any sense at all.
So not only is it not democratically sufficient, or maybe represent sufficient in representation, it's also not very productive because we spend so much energy fighting against the other party instead of passing effective policy and creating real change. So you might say that we do have third parties in the United States, such as the Libertarian and Green parties. So why is that these parties win very few congressional seats and have basically no significant effect on the presidential elections?
So there's this Gallup poll from 2018 that found that 57% of Americans support the idea of the third parties, and yet we cannot translate that idea into reality in the United States. There's this political science theory known as Duverger's Law, which explains that the core problem here is our first past the post or winner take all voting system. Each voter gets one vote, and it's a plurality system, meaning that the candidate who gets the most votes wins. We use single member electoral divisions, meaning there's only one winner per district. There is no middle ground in a winner take all system. Third parties get nothing. So if you imagine an election in which a majority of voters support a liberal platform, but there are two liberal candidates and one conservative, support for the liberal candidates will be split between the majority, and the conservative candidate wins with the minority but plurality of votes. This scenario probably sounds familiar. I bet it haunts Bernie Sanders' dreams. And here again, the two-party system perpetuates itself. A vote for a third candidate is as good as a vote for the candidate you disagree with the most, but that's not the only way that first past the post fails us. For example, there are a lot of problems with geographical representation.
So the first past the post system undermines third parties whose votes are not concentrated in certain districts. If your votes are not concentrated, they are technically considered wasted in districts where they don't have a chance of winning a majority.
And this also really feeds into feelings of regionalism. Like the media portrays different regions as being a solid Democratic or a solid Republican base. And that's discounting the presence of large populations of voters who don't identify with those bases and making them feel ostracized, further discouraging third parties from gaining footholds. For example, there's the perception that Democrats control California and the whole stereotype of Western elites. And that hides large populations of Republican voters, especially in the really well-off regions of Southern California and the rural regions in the east, on the eastern side of the state and in the north.
I feel like on a bigger nationwide scale, in terms of geographic representation, we cannot discount as well the Electoral College that affects our presidential elections. The popular argument for the Electoral College is that it gives full representation to those in more sparsely populated states, such as Montana or Idaho and even Vermont. And people say, you know, why should areas such as New York or California, more populated states, decide the fate of the rest of the country? But at the same time, it seems that every year the presidential election is decided by a few swing states, such as Pennsylvania or Ohio or Michigan. It seems like the people in those states are deciding the fate of the rest of the country. In terms of third parties, in the 2016 presidential election, around 5 million votes were casted for a third party candidate. None of these candidates won any electoral seats.
Another huge problem with first past the post is the idea of wasted vote theory, which is this idea that in a winner-take-all two-party system, you can't afford to waste your vote on a third-party candidate, even if that candidate reflects your values more and you believe they would be a better candidate and do a better job. You can't vote for them because they won't win, and you're essentially wasting your vote by feeding into the success of the candidate you disagree with.
I think this wasted vote theory also accurately describes how many people felt this past Democratic primary. So, you know, how many people passed up a vote for Sanders or Warren just because they think that neither of those candidates could have a chance at winning the presidency, instead of voting based on what their beliefs are.
So when we're talking about first past the post Democratic competition, we have to bring up the Downsian model of elections. This idea that in a two-candidate race, both candidates' platforms will converge to the preferred platform of the median voter. If you think about it like this, imagine if political ideology was literally placed on a two-dimensional spectrum, and imagine that there are two candidates and three voters, and assume that voters will vote for the candidate with the proposed platform that's closest to their place on the spectrum. If you have candidate A, who's more liberal and lies somewhere on the spectrum between voters 1 and 2, while candidate B is more conservative and lies very close to voter 3. Candidate A might win, but candidate B realizes this and moves her platform so that she's closer to voter 2 and still closer to voter 3 than candidate A is. And now B might win, but A steals her idea. And the whole thing goes on and on until the candidates end up straddling the ideal platform of voter 2, and the election is a toss-up. We can extrapolate that the same thing would happen in an election with 5 voters, or 11, or a million and one. And we should note that the Downsian model doesn't account for modern American polarization, and it makes assumptions that candidates don't have true values, though many candidates' stated values and platforms are often much more polarized than their actions once in office. So is this a problem? Maybe it's not the end of the world that centrists end up in charge. I would argue, however, that it is pretty undemocratic. If the majority of voters are not centrists, then the majority of representatives should not be centrists either. The views of voters aren't being translated into the legislature if the Downsian model holds true.
I also think it's an important point that you brought up about modern American polarization, because it seems that ever since 2016, it hasn't been very centrist, and the country is extremely divided along party lines, which makes it even harder to pass meaningful policies. We're all forced to make more compromises on our own views and beliefs because we think the other side is worse, and this cements a more binary system that's still not very representative of the American people. Like you said before, people do not fundamentally fit into two camps, but polarization with a two-party system forces them to choose one. I guess another question could be whether parties are necessary. It seems so strange to think about a political system that isn't represented by political parties. I think they do make the political process more efficient. However, it also seems like parties tend to limit accurate representation of what really matters, which is how Americans view important issues.
Yeah, I think functionally, political parties aren't really representative of anything. They're just interest groups on steroids. Their platforms shift significantly every 10 years or so to keep up with public opinion because party leaders don't really believe in anything but winning. I think they're really just tools for candidates to label themselves in order to signal instructions to voters. I don't know what a world without the political parties would look like, but I would love to see a United States that doesn't hold them up as the end-all be-all of political opinion.
I would imagine that a political system where parties play a less important role would resemble the ballot measures in individual states for this current election. Although this might make the process less efficient, especially on a nationwide scale, and one could also argue that the ballots don't represent everyone's desired policies or solutions, voters are more directly involved in the process and results aren't split based on party politics.
I am a big fan of the California ballot system, and California is not the only state that does things that way, but it's definitely the one that I'm most familiar with. I love that it forces voters to confront each issue individually, not along party lines, and really think about their opinions. And I love that they apply to specific scenarios, because I love that it requires us to be more nuanced about our political thought. Propositions won't ask you, do you support higher taxes? But they'll ask you, like, would you support higher property taxes in order to better fund schools? And you can fall back on an ideology about taxes if you want to, but it's an arena in which you can think about the direct implications of your vote in a really unique way, in a unique situation.
I also really like that the ballot measures are a step away from the two-party system that allows us to think about the world not in labels, but in terms of real policy issues. I would love it if we could think about our congressional representatives in a similar way, but alas, we are stuck in a two-party hell where voters are forced to choose between a vote for a rock, a hard place, and being crushed in between them.
America's first-past-the-post system isn't democratic. What can we do about it? Well, we're going to explore two alternatives and their different shades in our next episode, ranked choice systems and mixed member proportional systems. Thank you for listening, and join us next time to hear us talk about how much more effective some other democratic systems might be and what we might learn from them. I'm Jordan.
And I'm Patty.
And we'll see you next time.